Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Edward Simon Cruz, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, we explore an art museum on campus, the Harry Potter play comes to Chicago, and what happens when your discussion section goes silent. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. For today's campus local story, we're digging up something from the archives. Northwestern is home to a free art museum, but do students visit it and know what resources it offers? Rachel Spears has the story.
The visual arts for free without even having to leave campus. The Block Museum of Art, affectionately called The Block, is Northwestern's own art museum. Located just south of Norris University Center and across the way from Pickstager Auditorium, is accessible to students and the public most days of the week. It is open for classes, tours, and just browsing interesting artwork. According to their website, the museum's mission is to act as an engine that drives questioning, experimentation, and collaboration across fields of study. The works on display and the resources provided by the museum hope to create spaces for shared encounters that help people to better understand themselves and the world around them. As engagement coordinator at The Block, Isabella Coe has a unique insight into what goes on behind the scenes to make spaces for students to engage with art. She explained the intentionality behind the museum.
We are an art museum on a university campus, right? So that kind of, that means that, like, we really see ourselves as an art museum for our campus and for campus communities.
Ella Hunter Campbell is an exchange student from University College London. She visited the museum for one of her classes this quarter and enjoyed being able to interact with art without having to go far.
I think it's incredible. I'm an exchange student and my university at home has a similar thing where we have art and everything else, but it's not as modern, if that makes sense. It's really nice. They have like touring exhibitions and stuff in there, and all of the staff were really lovely and knew a lot about what they were talking about and everything else. And I came away amazed, actually.
While The Block provides students with opportunities to visit in their classes, it is geared towards making a sustained impact on its diverse audiences. Coe described how one way in which the museum hopes to engage with the community is through programs like The Block Cinema, which shows films about topics that range in genre from experimental to classic. The Block acts as a unique resource to students of all academic backgrounds, from RTVF to art history, from STEM to economics. Another program called the Block Student Associates enables students to spearhead tours and make decisions about what pieces of artwork will find a permanent place in the collection.
Why that like relates to the like communal aspect is because it's like it takes a lot of work to like get consensus right amongst like many individuals. Even with like two people, it's hard to like get to consensus on things. So like the trust and like honesty and vulnerability and like clear and direct but kind communication that is necessary in order to like come to those kinds of decisions.
By engaging students in the development of the museum and actively working on strengthening ties with the university, The Block creates a bright future for itself.
Only more could grow out of that.
The art galleries are also an important part of the museum. Upstairs there are exhibits which encourage audiences to pause and think more deeply about the art that they are taking in. One Weinberg first year and Block Museum employee Alex Crowell reflected on how the art makes him feel.
It's a place where students can interact with art in a lot of different ways. Like me, I have gone there as a visitor, but also as an employee. So I get to experience the art there in those different ways.
He went on to talk about an exhibition by Katie West called The Clearing that incorporates 3D aspects to the art as well as an audio portion as a part of the museum's Actions for Earth exhibition.
But it's just like super relaxing to me, and it's very grounding, very earthy.
By providing an environment where people can relax and take a moment away from the hustle and bustle of academic life, The Block is a welcoming place for students and the community alike.
It's just a place where you can go to relax. Like, there's study spaces there. I don't think a lot of people know about those study spaces, but they are super, like, peaceful, relaxing. Like, it's really nice.
For me, it's a different way of using my brain. I'm a science major, but I love art, I love painting, and I love the kind of creative side of that. I think it gives people a way of kind of expressing their feelings and emotions in ways that aren't words.
Hunter Campbell goes on to explain why she thinks art is important to everyone.
Sometimes people relate a lot more to art, and it's more accessible.
From noon until 8 p.m. from Wednesday to Sunday, the Block Museum is open to students and the public. The exhibition, The Block Collects, will be open until March 3rd. Looking 101 will be open until April 21st, and Actions for the Earth, Art, Care, and Ecology will be available until July 7th.
And we are free and open for all. We're open for everyone, so we don't, like, distinguish or anything.
For WNUR News, I'm Rachel Spears.
In arts and entertainment, the hit play Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is now here in Chicago for a six-month stay on its first ever tour. Sophia Quesa has more.
Since September, Chicago's theater scene has welcomed a new high-profile and magical guest, as the North American tour of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child has its opening six-month stop here in the Windy City.
It's 19 years after the final book, and we're on the train headed for Hogwarts, and Albus Potter, who's Harry Potter's son, meets Scorpius Malfoy, who's Draco Malfoy's son, and out of their forbidden friendship, and a great epic adventure ensues.
That's Emmett Smith, who plays Albus Potter in the touring version of the show, and is a member of Northwestern's class of 2021. The choice to have the show not be another quote-unquote Harry Potter adventure in the vein of the books, and add new characters, may cause hesitancy in some. But for others, it's a welcome change of pace. Like A.J. Dickerson, a sophomore theater major who has seen the show three times, the most recent version being the Chicago one.
I didn't want to, like, hear more about Harry Potter. I did want to learn about the next generation.
Cursed Child has had several productions since 2016. While it's played places like Toronto, San Francisco, Tokyo, Broadway, and London, it's never had a tour until now.
Our director, who was here just a couple of weeks ago, said, "We never thought this would tour."
That's Ryan Garson, the company manager for the tour and a Northwestern alumni as well. With involved effects and necessary space specifications, the group faced the challenge of making the show tourable.
Hey, we've done it this way for 8 years in the world. Let's find another way to do it and to still inspire people to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, how do we make this work? You know, they're like, oh, well, when we were challenged to do this in a different way, we actually found a better way as opposed to the original way. We can actually do it better, cheaper, easier, with, you know, less manpower.
And one of these, quote, new ways of doing things was dealing with the show's length. This production is the shortest the show has ever been, clocking in at 2 hours and 50 minutes. To compare, the versions in places like Toronto and San Francisco run 3 hours and 30 minutes. Meanwhile, the one currently in London clocks in at over 5 hours. So what caused the decision to cut nearly half of the material? Here's Smith again.
The biggest one is to kind of make it more accessible for folks. Essentially, you can see the whole story in, like, the length of a play.
Now, while Smith's first experience with the show is this newest iteration, the tour's rehearsal and preparation process also brought on some familiar faces.
We have the original creative team with us through our rehearsal process, which is a really rare thing for, like, a long-running show to have the director and folks that created it. So it's this kind of hybrid company of returning veterans and new folks like me.
One of the people returning to the show was Michael Cross, who was with the show in Toronto and now serves as the magic and illusion lead for the tour. His job involves teaching the tricks and illusions to actors and working with the team over the many, many months to ensure their continued success. Cross also has the task of figuring out how to modify the magic for the tour.
Sometimes those changes are very small micro things, like a change in rhythm. Other times it's a totally different technique that you're doing, getting to kind of help play a role in redesigning the magic here in Chicago, where in Toronto I was just sort of helping to set it and replicate what was already there. And there was a bit of that this time, but there was also the chance to really kind of make things feel fresh and new and exciting again.
And these aren't small tricks Cross and the rest of the team were having to rework and redesign.
These are real, actual, legit magic tricks that these actors are learning, along with learning all of the intense beats of the show, the script, all the movement, the blocking. They're learning stuff in a matter of weeks or months that professional magicians take years of their life to learn and make look as good as these actors make it look in the show.
And it's seeing this real magic, whether it's a Polyjuice potion or making a train from a suitcase, and the act of trying to figure out how it works, that is part of the joy of watching the show. Here's Dickerson again.
There's a conical range of view or field of view that you want your audience to sit in where your illusions work. So I was sitting on the, like, sort of right on the edge, so I was outside of that view. So there's a couple things that I could see.
And not to be cliche and say, oh, you simply have to see it to believe it, but that's quite literally the case here, as I found out in my conversation with Cross.
Any trick you can walk me through, or is it all NDA?
It is all so, so private, but it's also, I mean, I wouldn't want to spoil the magic, because guaranteed, once you learn how the thing is done, it's going to be way less fun and impressive.
Which I guess goes to show how tight a ship the Cursed Child people are running. It's a massive show with so many puzzle pieces, but as Garson told me, it's been a truly magical experience.
To see how it so beautifully comes together, and we travel 70 people with the tour. Every single person on our team is needed to make the show happen. Even if it seems like there's only one actor on stage, I can guarantee you there are 24 people that are focusing and working to make that person do what they need to do, be seen, be heard. It's the moments when you can step back, take a look at it all, and realize all of the pieces that come together to make this happen. And it's collaboration. It's really creating magic.
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child runs at the James M. Niederlander Theater from now until February 1st, 2025. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Quesa.
This oddity story came from last spring, but it might speak to you today. Have you ever been in a really awkward discussion section where no one wants to participate and the silence drags on and on? Why does this happen, and how can we fix the problem? Rose Carlson has the story.
Athenian poet and playwright Euripides once said, "Silence is true wisdom's best reply." Evidently, Euripides did not attend any small classes or discussion sections at Northwestern University. I started as a freshman at Northwestern in the fall. One thing I've noticed since then is the silence. Every once in a while, in a small class or discussion section, the TA or professor will ask a question and no one answers. Sometimes those pauses give me the time and space to figure out something to say or to materialize the thought that has already been circling in my mind. But in other instances, as the silence deepens with each passing second, I begin to hope in anguish that someone else has something to say. I was curious, what are other students' experiences with this auditory space? I asked around.
Please break the silence. Please break the silence before as you start picking on people. Please, 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 please.
That's Weinberg first-year Alan Shu sharing his inner thoughts after facing a recent bout of crickets in his seminar on China in the American Imagination.
We had to read a 300-ish pages of reading in the span of 2 days. And everyone else comes in like, did everyone else read? Like, and then everyone's like, no. No one finished. And so during the discussion, the professor asked a question regarding the reading. Dead silence. Nothing. No one else made a sound.
Alan told me the silence is quite common in his seminar. Communication junior Jillian Olson said she has actually started timing the length of the silence in her U.S. gay and lesbian history discussion.
I think the longest was about 5 minutes. Of just empty silence.
5 minutes? You could listen to the song Respect by Aretha Franklin twice and still have 16 seconds of change with a silence that long.
And we all sit in a circle, so there's not really anywhere for us to hide. And we'll just stare really intensely at our computer like we're looking for notes, but none of us are looking for notes. And it has never been more clear that not a soul has done the reading.
Jillian said the mountain of work for her other classes deters her from the readings for her history discussion.
An awkward hour is easier for me to endure than, like, missing an assignment for another class.
Breaking the silence has been on my mind recently, in part because of my Spanish class. I do a lot of the staring down at the desk kind of thing in this class because once I've answered maybe 2 questions in the span of 5 minutes, I feel like it's important for me to not take up so much of the airspace. My Spanish professor, Daisy Cuate, said she's also been thinking about these uncomfortable quiet moments. and she noticed something that I've missed as I sit at my desk in Kresge and stare at the ground to endure the deafening quiet.
When I was younger, and a teacher asked something, whether I wanted to answer the question or not, whether I knew the answer or not, if I was not ready for it, I would try to, like, pretend like I was doing something while I was thinking about the answer. I've noticed that Northwestern students will have that direct eye contact while sitting in silence, and I find that very interesting.
Daisy also said that she thinks Northwestern students in her Spanish classes may be too focused on the answer itself and not what they could learn from trying to articulate a response.
So I don't know that Northwestern students, at least in my Spanish class, I can't speak for, like, obviously other classes, like STEM classes, I don't know that Northwestern students always know the why behind the questioning sometimes. I think that they might be stuck on, like, the actual right or wrong answer, like, what is she looking for type of thing, instead of just being like, this might just be practice.
Answering as a tool for practice instead of a proof of knowledge. I almost dropped my phone when she said that. Practice? Discussions, for me, can sometimes feel like performance. Participation is monitored and often assessed. It's not a place to make mistakes. It's just another less intimidating test. But how would discussions look if they were focused on practice and not performance? Would the silence take more of a backseat? Perhaps what Euripides really meant when he said, "Silence is true wisdom's best reply," is that we need a few seconds before we answer. But to sit in complete silence would be to waste an opportunity to learn. For WNUR News, I'm Rose Carlson.
It's Friday, so it's time for Fair Weather Friends. The weather has indeed been quite fair this week, but get ready for more days that feel like fall. I have the latest. I'm Edward. Welcome back to Fairweather Friends. Each week, we give you a peek into the local and national weather. Everything from the Northern Lights to lightning and a thunder. From Evanston, Illinois, this is Fairweather Friends.
Here's the weather.
Fall has gotten off to a bright start. The sun's been shining, and temperatures have usually been in the 50s, 60s, and sometimes low 70s. We had some windy afternoons here in the suburbs of Chicagoland, but we also didn't get much, if any, precipitation. Hope you enjoyed this second summer of sorts, because now it's time to cool things down. Today's temperature climbed all the way into the 80s, but if your job is just beach, you may need to take a few days off. And for the rest of us, make sure you have a jacket on before you step outside. We're looking at temps in the 50s and low 60s tomorrow and Sunday, plus a few colder days after that. Expect a windy weekend, plus a couple showers and a potential thunderstorm later tomorrow. If you went out last night, you might have been treated to Mother Nature's stunning signature light show, also known as Aurora Borealis or the Northern Lights. You probably won't see this display again tonight, but we may have more opportunities in the future. Here's why. The sun regularly generates energy and releases it in several ways, as light, as radiation, and as charged particles. Sometimes, the sun lets out larger bursts of energy through coronal mass ejections. Yesterday, the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration issued an alert for a severe geomagnetic storm. These occur when a coronal mass ejection disrupts the Earth's magnetic field. Geomagnetic storms can temporarily disrupt Earth's radio and power signals, but they can also give us stunning light shows. Some particles travel down the magnetic field and into the Earth's atmosphere. When these particles interact with nitrogen, they produce blue and purple light. When they interact with oxygen, they produce red and green light. The sun is nearing the peak of its current solar cycle, meaning it's more active than normal. In May, the sun produced its biggest solar flare in almost two decades, leading to a similar light display. The NOAA's Space Weather Prediction Center regularly updates the public on geomagnetic storms. You can follow them at NOAA.gov for the latest aurora forecasts. That's all for this week's edition of Fair Weather Friends. Thanks for tuning in. Let's hope this weekend feels more like a breeze than a storm. In Evanston, Illinois, Edward Simon Cruz, WNUR News. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. the Council on American Islamic Relations released a report calling Northwestern a, quote, institution of particular concern. The group said Northwestern has created a hostile environment that allows Islamophobia and anti-Muslim racism. Yesterday in downtown Evanston, two people tripped and fell into a window at the store Accents Plus. Both people were injured and taken to the hospital. The store's owner says that the injuries were minor, as were damages to the building itself. In Chicago, a federal court has indicted the former CEO of Loretto Hospital for alleged embezzlement. According to the indictment, 73-year-old George Miller allegedly diverted contracts worth millions of dollars to certain medical supply companies, all while taking a cut of the proceeds. In Florida, several airports and tourist attractions have reopened today following the devastation of Hurricane Milton. Milton made landfall in Florida on Wednesday night, bringing tornadoes and flooding through its path of destruction. At least 17 people have died from the storm. To donate to the Florida Disaster Fund, go to volunteerflorida.org. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Georgia Kerrigan, and our reporters are Rachel Spears, Sophia Kesa, Rose Carlson, and me. I'm Edward Simon Clues. Catch our next newscast Monday, October 14th. Now, back to scheduled programming.